Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a great episode for you today. We'll be talking about the LeBron James versus Charles Barkley debate. All-Star Weekend, all the Saturday contestants have been revealed, so we will break that down for you. And we'll give you all of the latest on the latest NBA trade rumors. Before we get underway here, be sure to check us out on Twitter, at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can find us on iTunes. We love it if you subscribe, download, leave us some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And this year we're being hosted on FanRag Sports, so be sure to check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA section, at FanRag NBA. Today I have a special announcement. My normal co-host, Morten Jensen, has invited me in the spirit of the Chicago Bulls to a press conference. So we are going to start our episode going right to the presser. Take it away, Mort.
Yes. Hello, Brian. As you know, there have been some questions recently regarding the organization, and I'm here to talk about it. The Chicago Bulls have been a hotbed of poor decisions for almost a decade now. They've lugged into basically everything and have no grasp of how to run an organization. I won't be taking any questions.
Wait, excuse me, Mort. Didn't you just invite me to a press conference? Why won't you take any questions?
I'm just not.
Well, Mort, can you address the latest rumors that you and the Boston Celtics may re-engage in trade talks with Jimmy Butler heading into the trade deadline?
We have a very firm policy of not discussing anything to the media or otherwise, because we're going to fine everybody or fire them, Ron Adams, if you speak to anyone outside of the inner workings of the organization.
Okay.
So no, I cannot, Brian. I cannot.
Okay. Well, how about this report from ESPN's Nick Friedel that the Bulls aren't sure they could build around Jimmy Butler as their number one option? Can you speak to that?
You mean the crooked media? The crooked media who's always lying? Sad.
Gar Foreman has been mixed with Donald Trump. This is just very confusing. How about this? ESPN's Ryan Russillo recently said on the radio that at one point when Jimmy Butler was still on his rookie contract and was negotiating an extension, that the Bulls reportedly threatened to bench him for Tony Snell if he did not sign the extension. Is that true?
We have in no way any desire to confirm or deny these reports, and no one else have commented on them.
Okay. Okay. How about this?
This is where you say Jimmy Butler has basically commented on it.
That is true. He gave the best non-denial in league history. How about last question for you, Gar Morton? So CSN Chicago's Vincent Goodwill, he reported on Thursday night that the Bulls have inquired with the Philadelphia 76ers about Jahlil Okafor. Can you confirm his report?
I will not confirm those reports, but I will say the following. We are looking to get younger and more athletic, which was why we signed Rajon Rondo in the offseason. And given the fact that we've been criticized lately of not accepting new era basketball, obviously a player of Jahlil Okafor is within our deepest interest.
Well, thank you, Garmort. This was a very informative, enlightening press conference, as always, with you. Thank you for taking the time to speak with the media for 1 minute.
And I actually ended up answering questions. This is dreadful. Crooked media. Crooked media.
So there we go. Morten Jensen is back on the podcast after a couple weeks. Welcome back, Mort.
Thanks, Brian. That's, I've been gone for a little while. Been on my honeymoon and been sick. Doing a whole bunch of weird stuff lately.
Yeah, 2017 has not been kind to you quite yet, but hopefully you'll turn it around with Jahlil Okafor.
That sounds so wrong. Like, we've been on a honeymoon, and then you say 2017 hasn't been kind.
Yeah.
Let's put that into context. I just had a crappy honeymoon.
Yes.
Not because of my wife.
Right.
She was very lovely.
Right.
I had my son going, but my son got sick on the vacation to Rome, and we got sick, and it was just horrible. So that's a beta test. So everyone out there who's had a horrible honeymoon at one point in their life, if they ever had, just consider it a beta test and do another one.
That's good advice to live by.
Yeah.
And our third co-host, Sarah Chalea, could not join us today. She is protesting because Danny Green did not make the three-point shootout in All-Star Saturday, which we will talk about shortly. But Mort, we got to go back to your Bulls.
Whoa! Don't call them my Bulls, Brian.
you're
not going there.
Your former team, as listeners can attest to the first few minutes, it has been an eventful week as usual for the Bulls. You know, Sarah and I have been talking about them for the last couple weeks, but I'm going to concede the floor to you. What do you have to say about the mess that has happened? I mean, starting with the Butler and Wade blow up at the, you know, a couple weeks ago at their teammates, leading into, you know, all the latest about all the things we just mentioned.
When I saw the criticism from Jimmy and Wade, I started laughing a little bit. And then Rajon Rondo came out with his Instagram post, and I laughed even more. Look, this is turning into a soap opera of new dimensions. Like, you know, Mexican soap operas ain't got jack on the Chicago Bulls. It's really, really poor. But here's the thing. The whole situation got me thinking. Like, I went back at least a decade, and I started looking at the decisions of the Bulls, generally speaking. And it's come to my attention that virtually every good thing that's happened to him is based on a pretty big element of luck. Mm-hmm. Let's look at Derrick Rose,
yep,
drafted in 08. Like, that was 1.7% chance. Otherwise, they were ninth and looking at, like, Brook Lopez stuff, right? Who knows how the draft shakes out if someone else gets the first pick, because Michael Beasley at that point in time was involved as well, yada, yada, yada. The Bulls could theoretically have ended up with, like, a Jared Bayless at ninth.
Hey, now.
I like Jared. I like Jared, but I mean,
yeah,
there's a big difference, right, to a guy winning an MVP in his third year and Jared Bayless.
Correct.
So they luck into that. In 2011, they definitely luck into Jimmy Butler, like, big time.
Yeah.
They kind of, I don't want to completely say they lucked into Taj Gibson in 09, mm-hmm, because they did a very solid scouting job on him.
Sure.
But still, he outplayed expectation from a league-wide perspective. So again, there was an element of luck involved. Mm-hmm. All right. After 2011 draft, that's where things just go bad, and it proves that they don't really have that great a grasp on drafting as people might have expected them to. In 2012, they draft Marcus Teague, who played, like, I don't even know, like, 82 career games, something like that. I don't know. It was really bad. Really bad. Out of the league. Then in 2013, they decided to go with Tony Snell. And the rumor at the time was Snell was viewed as, like, an early second round pick. And they drafted him 20th. And this was despite the fact that they needed a backup center. Mm-hmm. Like, Rudy Gobert and Gorgui Dieng were there. But they chose Snell because they felt that he had Scottie Pippen potential. And it should also be mentioned that Gar Foreman came out during the very summer of Snell's drafting and said to the media that he had added 18 pounds of muscle.
Oh my God.
Since he was drafted into training camp. If that's the case, then holy hell had Snell been a skinny dude before that, because that's, yeah, such a lie.
Right.
Basically. And then came the very supposedly strong 2014 draft, where the Bulls ended up trading 5 picks for Doug McDermott.
Yes.
I like Doug.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Sure.
You know, solid player when he gets into the rhythm, and he's got that ability to, at times, channel his inner Paul Pierce.
Yeah.
I mean, he does, mm-hmm, but it's just on so rare occasion that it's not even, you know, fun to talk about. Then we move on to 2015. Bobby Portis, fair pick at 22, like that. I wanted him at 22 when he dropped there, so it's okay. Mm-hmm. But he's turned out to be not so great. Mm-hmm. Then last year, Denzel Valentine, and he's not playing well either. Here's the thing: Bulls like their seniors.
Yeah,
they keep drafting seniors, and I'm pretty certain that if they had the ability to draft a 32 year old, they would. Because the same logic applies to their free agent decisions.
Right.
Going back to 2006, Ben Wallace, age 32. Then in 2010, when they're going all in on the LeBron wagon, which they should, every team, you know, should have done that because right. it's completely fair. They get a 29-year-old Carlos Boozer, but that was in an attempt to lure some of the bigger free agents. Mm-hmm. Fine. Then it goes wrong in 2014 with Powell, like 34 at the time, and now Wade, 34. They continuously pick up players who are significantly past their prime. But going back to the draft for a minute, you have these seniors who have played 4 years in college, who the Bulls believe and argue whenever they are introduced at a press conference after the draft, they go, well, he's a four-year guy and he's more ready to contribute now than a lot of other guys. And it turns out routinely that they are not.
Right.
They are definitely not. There is no logic whatsoever for the Bulls anymore to keep on thinking that seniors are somehow better, because they also have less potential than a guy coming off a freshman season.
Yeah.
But that's because they want these players from certain programs who've been through the rubble, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't work that way, and they are looking at the NBA from a perspective that was relevant in the 90s or early 2000s. This is so far removed of a team who's accepted and embraced new era basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they signed Fred Hoiberg, that was like, oh, okay, we kind of get it. That was what they hinted at the fan base. They kind of told the fan base, we get it.
Right.
You need a guy who's creative. You need a guy who'll get a lot of frees up, and we're going to embrace that. No, they didn't. They did not. They completely screwed over Fred Hoiberg. I mean, I don't think Fred Hoiberg should be the coach of the Bulls from here on out, mostly because, you know, he's associated with Gar Forman, and I think the entire thing has to go, and I don't think anyone should really stay.
Yeah.
But Fred's got a raw deal here.
Yeah.
A very raw deal. Here tonight, we're recording this on a Friday. Tonight, the Bulls are playing Houston. And Fred said in a pregame interview that he was almost amazed at Houston getting up 53s sometimes a game.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, it takes us a month to do that, which was like a subtle jab at management and a jab I kind of like, because that is so true. You hire a guy who is known for getting a lot of threes up, using drag screens and motion and whatnot, and you give him a lot of ball heavy guys who needs to have the ball in their hands to create and aren't great shooters and are really isolation basketball players.
Yeah.
Like this makes zero sense. And now with the Jimmy thing, like, I totally believe in Jimmy, he more or less confirmed it, that they said these things to Jimmy because they are always trying to win the PR game.
Right.
Always. That's their angle. And I feel bad for Bulls writers, like, in particular, like a guy like Casey Johnson,
mm-hmm.
a guy who routinely is on the beat, is really around the team constantly. I feel like he does such a great job despite getting so little information out there from them.
Yeah.
Like he's doing whatever he can to survive in that preposterous field of the Bulls. Like he's trying to bring out pieces, and he's writing spectacular pieces, and the Bulls are giving him nothing. They're giving no one nothing. I mean, it's
right.
It's so horrible at times, and I just feel so bad for those media members, like sitting there at press conferences, and they know, like I've watched every Chicago Bulls press conference in the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
and you just get the sense that a lot of these guys, including Nick Friedell and whatever, they sit there and they have these questions,
yeah,
but they don't even ask them anymore because they know they're not going to get a response. Gar Forman is a goddamn politician,
right? I remember when that the day of Gar's press conference last week, Sarah and I recorded right after, and you know, famously, he did not take any questions, as we mocked in the open of this podcast. I remember Zach Lowe of ESPN.com tweeted that morning, you know, when the news broke that he was going to have a press conference after a shoot around. They're like, "Oh, this is going to be good." And then, yeah, I saw a number of Bulls writers being like, "Hey, Zach, you haven't watched the Bulls press conference in a while, have you? This is, like, you're right. They know it is, he's just going to stonewall and not mm-hmm. actually answer a single question."
Yeah. That's because they want to keep everything in-house. Which, look, I can appreciate not going out there and just, like, laying your entire planet out there in sure. public. That's fine. But they are so against any form of transparency that they are alienating their fan base, mm-hmm. they're alienating their the media, and they're screwing themselves. Like, so the Bulls actually had some sort of ticket sale campaign, whatever. They went on Twitter and said, you can get tickets for this and this and that. And the response to that Twitter post was amazing. Like, fans were like, I would buy those tickets if you got a goddamn better product on the floor. Like, some guy just typed LOL.
Yeah.
Like, as if I want to go to the Bulls game, right. You know? It was no one were interested of the people who typed in.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is like, you know what? You're screwing us. So why should we help pay for you, your team?
Right.
And the Bulls are the financial champions of the NBA, yeah. year in, year out.
Definitely.
They take in so much revenue and profit because they have this global brand. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael Jordan, by the way, who they recognize far too infrequently. And it's because they have this idea that organizations, they do everything. It's not one player's, you know, fault or credits for doing this and that. It is such a closed off organization, and I have zero level of patience or respect left for any member of upper level management. It is such a dreadful, unprofessional way that everything is handled, and it should come to an end this year, but it's not, because as long as they're in the black, they are going to continue rolling out Gar and John Paxson,
mm-hmm.
and things are going to stay the course. Because, hey, we might get into the playoffs.
Right.
We don't care about if it's the eighth seed or it's the first seed, because hashtag playoff revenue. Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
That's how they think, right?
Right.
I mean, I have this sneaky suspicion that every time the Bulls make the playoffs, Jerry Reinsdorf sent out like an email that just says, cash money, yo, and that's it. It's such a ghastly way of running a franchise, especially in this day and age where the media is everywhere.
Yeah.
Because they do not understand the concept of how to engage with anyone. They have no grasp of social media. Like, you've seen all the Twitter feeds for different teams.
Oh, yeah.
Like Portland.
Yeah,
and yeah. They like to interact with one another.
Yeah.
And like have in the summer, they have Photoshop competitions.
Yeah, they have personality. Like, they're fun.
Like, really fun. It's so great.
Yeah.
Like, you, as a fan, you get a kick out of it.
Right.
The Bulls are just like, I'm too good for this.
Yeah.
They never do those things. And it's that aura they send out. It is, I am above everyone else.
Right.
We are above everyone else because we are the Chicago Bulls, the greatest brand in basketball. Blah, 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 blah. And that's what they send out. And they do not understand that they send out this feeling. They don't understand that this is the vibe that's outgoing from the entire core of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my final complaint about them. It's bad at every level of their infrastructure. Like, let's start from the very top.
Yeah.
Ownership.
Yep.
There's an element of greed there, whatever, you know, and I don't care what people say. There is.
Yeah.
There definitely is. Then you go to the front office, who are basically incapable of thinking outside the box because they always think traditionally. They're really 80s. We need seniors all the time, and we need to play the free agent market. Trades, no. What a weird thing to propose. A trade? Oh, no. Free agents are the way to go. Seniors and free agency, old players, experience. Yeah, that's what we need. All right, then we go to coaching right now. Okay, fair enough. They had a wonderful time with Tom Thibodeau, at least, you know, from fans' perspective. Fans liked him.
Right.
He brought results.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, you got to replace him with someone who doesn't give results, right?
Sure, absolutely.
That's their MO. So you have Fred Hoiberg there, who is probably, at this point, not yet an NBA coach.
Yeah. Or
I would say.
If he was, I feel like, I mean, I'm with you in the sense that he needs, if they're going to fire Gar Paxson, they need to fire him as well, because it seems like he has no control over that locker room whatsoever. Like, there is a clip circulating on Twitter. What was it? Oh, where they blew that lead against Atlanta. Where
Jimmy didn't want the timeout.
Like Fred is calling a timeout. Jimmy looks at him and just is like, what what the hell? No. And then he like goes, takes it down himself, freelances, scores. But yeah, it seems like he has no management over that locker room whatsoever.
None whatsoever. No. Then the roster, flawed virtually every season. Like they, back in the day before the three-point shot became a huge weapon, they needed an inside presence because they had Ben Gordon and Kirk Heinrich and Lou Alding as their core for a couple of years. And Ben Gordon, whatever you feel about him, he was straight fire from downtown as a Bull.
Yeah.
And so they actually had very nice spacing, but couldn't get like a low post player because that would have actually brought a pretty nice, on-court chemistry at that point in time.
Right.
But that's continuously weird roster decisions. The roster is always flawed for whatever reason. And now even the announcers, and that's not even now, that's been for a while. Yeah. Even the announcers in Neil Fung and Stacey King are just so outright unprofessional. Neil can't even see anymore. He calls a 20-footer a long three. And Stacey King uses most of his time, you know, searching for weird catchphrases that aren't even good.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't enjoy any level of their infrastructure.
Yeah.
Every level of their infrastructure is highly flawed and in need of change. But no, because that money keeps rolling in, so we're going to roll out that same product because in their minds, if the money is coming in, then there's no problem whatsoever. Basically, I'm saying to Bulls fans who are listening, if you want change, you got to boycott them. You got to say, I'm not buying Bulls tickets. I'm not going to watch their games. I'm going to make sure they have low ratings. I'm going to make sure that they're not, sold out every game at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it comes down to because they're not going to change unless you attack their wallets.
Yeah. Yeah. I think two thoughts here before we move on. I think you're totally right. As a Sixers fan, during the Hinkie era, the stadium was often half empty. And I think that probably encouraged them to speed up the process a little bit because they were being hit in the wallet. But Bulls, I mean, I live in Chicago. I can vouch, tickets are still astronomically expensive to get into the Bulls games. Even, $40-$50 to get into like the baseline upper level 300 tickets, 75 for center court in the 300 level. You're paying over 100 to get into the box level. Mm. And this is like, I went to the Bulls Sixers game this past Sunday with my wife and a couple friends, and this is, I think, the perfect summation of the Chicago Bulls right now. The Bulls won pretty resoundingly. The Sixers did not have Embiid. I think the final score was something like 121 to 105 or 106, something like that. Afterward, my wife, who, like you, Morton, is sort of a Bulls fan now. She was a Bulls fan, but is on the edge. She just looked like really upset. I was like, you won, right? And she's a fourth-year medical student, so she hasn't really seen the team that much this year. She's like, I know you guys have been talking about how bad they are, but until I saw them, I didn't really appreciate. Like, that just, I know we scored 120, but that wasn't good basketball. That just wasn't fun. Like, I've seen her less upset after Bulls losses than I did after this 15-point win. So I think I think you're right. It's time, it's time to clean house, especially up top, and then whatever befalls the roster from there, we will see. I think moral of the story is the Bulls should be one of the most interesting teams to watch heading into the trade deadline, but as you said, they probably will not be.
And here's the thing, like Jahlil Okafor. Yeah, we're laughing, but they genuinely think that he's a good idea.
Yeah, I know, it's great. I reached out to you on Twitter like 2 weeks ago before any of this happened, and I said they're going to trade Okafor to Chicago for Nico Mirotić and a top 10 protected pick, and I'm standing by that prediction because Mirotić is apparently the one who was one of the targets of that rant from Butler and Wade, so it seems like they're forcing him out. He's a free agent this summer, so I don't think the Sixers would trade for him straight up for Okafor. You throw a lightly protected pick in there because the Bulls probably figure, hell, we're not getting that much production out of those players anyway. Who was it? I think your buddy Mark Karadzulis, who is He tweeted
this salary works.
Yeah, right. And he had like a fake Gar. He had like a picture of Gar on Twitter with a press conference. Like, he's a number three player. He came out of Duke. He's a proven, ready to contribute. You can hear Gar Forman saying those words about Jahlil Okafor. So I, for one, am rooting very much for that trade to happen, just to capture. We might have to do like a video Skype for that podcast, just to let both of our reactions be shared and captured for eternity. But congratulations, that rant really did live up to my expectations. Well done.
Well, I'm glad because I'm pissed off right now.
I can tell. So yeah. Let's move on to another feud that sparked this past week. LeBron James and Charles Barkley. And I'm just going to warn listeners right from the top here, as an employee of Bleacher Report, I will not be speaking ill of Charles, as he is a Turner Sports colleague, and I do not want to get fired. So I'm going to read the comments from both men, and then Morton, you can take the wheel from here, my friend. So, Sarah and I talked last week. LeBron has been kind of complaining about they need another playmaker. Charles Barkley, on last Thursday's edition of Inside the NBA, he responded to James and called it inappropriate, whiny, all of the above. Basically said they have the highest payroll in NBA history. Laid out all the people that they signed, signed J.R. Smith. They signed Shumpert. They brought in Kyle Korver. He didn't even mention Tristan Thompson. So the same thing there. He said he's the best player in the world. Does he want all of the good players? He don't want to compete. He is an amazing player. They're the defending champs. LeBron did not take kindly to that. He told, it was on Monday. He was speaking with ESPN's Dave McMenamin and called Charles Barkley a hater. Asked what makes what he says credible, because he's on TV. And then he followed up and said, I'm not going to let him disrespect my legacy like that. I'm not the one who threw somebody through a window. I never spit on a kid. I never had unpaid debt in Las Vegas. I never said I'm not a role model. I never showed up to All-Star Weekend on Sunday because I was in Vegas all weekend partying. All I've done for my entire career is represent the NBA the right way. 14 years, never got in trouble, respected the game. Print that. So, Mort, whose side are you on here? Team LeBron, Team Barkley, or do you think both have valid points?
All right, before I start, complaining about Chug, which I am going to, I'm just going to say one thing. He's right about LeBron being sort of a diva, because that's true. And one thing I haven't understood in this entire process has been why LeBron is... He wants a playmaker.
Sure. Right?
He wants a point guard.
Yep.
I don't know why he kind of throws Cave Felder under the bus here, because Cave Felder is on that roster.
Yeah.
Like, instead of saying, I want a playmaker, he should tell management, hey, I want more minutes for Cave Felder, because Cave Felder is awesome. Felder averaged like 9.3 assists last year at Oakland. He can shoot it. We know he can score it because he averaged almost, I think, 30, something like that. I mean, there's really no downside to playing Felder, and it's going to be for like 13 minutes anyway. Irving is going to take up 35. Like, you can survive with Cave Felder playing 13 minutes a game. So like, in that sense, I disagree with what LeBron needs. Now, having said that, oh my god, LeBron ethered Charles Barkley to the extent that I was sitting there almost cryingly laughing, because that was just so epic, and it's a long time coming. And hashtag don't get fired, Brian, because you're not even allowed to laugh right now or have any sort of reaction. But Charles Barkley is, he's Donald Trump. And I'll tell you why. Like, a lot of people in the NBA are apparently Donald Trump. That's like the new thing if you're upset at someone. But because he makes loud noises while saying nothing and just, to get in the media. He says stuff. Like, Charles Barkley says stuff, and there is no relevancy. He's afraid of intel, data, whatever. Like, oh, the league shouldn't be all that focused on data, and oh, I don't even know what Daryl Morey looks like, yada, 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 yada. Oh, the league is in bad shape. Look, you know what? old man yelling at clouds. You need to just be quiet now. You offer no valid inputs. You're just a media personality in the tone of Skip Bayless, who's trying to get YouTube famous or whatever it is you're trying to do. People call you real, but no, you're really not, because being real is also dealing with facts. It's dealing with, you know, reality. And Charles, my man, you are certainly not dealing with anything remotely connected to reality. You're living in your own goddamn circle where you think that everything you say is something that should be highly regarded, and it really, really shouldn't be. Shut the hell up, you babbling moron.
There you go. I will say, it seemed like, there was another episode of Inside the NBA last night on TNT. Obviously, that was the lead story, were these comments from Barkley and LeBron. I was like, Shaq really had LeBron's back. It looked like, you know, Shaq was, he's like, if you said that about me, I would come to the studio and punch you in the mouth. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, former teammate, remember?
Right, I know. So it was, you know, it kind of speaks to, and what Shaq took issue with in particular was calling out LeBron's competitiveness because,
right.
I mean,
right.
You know, LeBron has dealt with that his whole career. You mentioned Skip Bayless, who continues to do that in an attempt to drive ratings. As a side note, I don't know if you guys follow Richard Deitch on Twitter, but he every day, he works for Sports Illustrated, he's their media reporter, and every day now he tweets out a Skip Bayless quote with like, you know, his show got X number of viewers, this rerun of Sesame Street got five times as much at the same time slot. Like, it's excellent. I would advise following him for many reasons, but if only for that. Just to kind of shame the hot taker. But going back to the point, you know, LeBron has dealt with these questions about his competitiveness his entire career.
Right.
You would think after overcoming a 3-1 deficit against a historically great team in the finals last year, he would have finally buried that. But no, I mean, Sarah and I talked about kind of his comments, LeBron's comments last week. I just think it's kind of born out of frustration because they're just down some healthy bodies. You know, Kevin Love's had back spasms. J.R. Smith's out for a while. LeBron is leading the league in minutes per game, and they went into the year saying we need to cut down on his minutes. So I think he's just tired and frustrated and wants a little bit of help for that reason. That said, I am going to give Chuck credit for taking the punch in stride. Like, he said something like, well, yeah, LeBron did his research. So at least he was right about, you know, all these things he called me out about. So kudos to Chuck.
Well, he kind of had to, though.
Right, I know.
He had to because he knew he lost.
Yeah, but like, good for him for at least, you know, not digging further in, being like, well, you know what?
Yeah.
I dish it out, you dish it back. That's fine. That's how this works.
Yeah.
So
no, I agree with.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
That is.
So let's talk more about the Cavs because, you know, we mentioned that LeBron is looking for a playmaker. They hosted a huge free agent workout on Wednesday. They brought in Jordan Farmar, Mario Chalmers, Kirk Heinrich, and Lance Stevenson.
Kirk Heinrich,
I know. Yeah. The answer. Who knew he would be the answer to the Cavs' woes? According to Dave McMenamin of ESPN.com, Farmar is the front runner from that group. And he would agree to sign a 10-day deal. Whereas Chalmers and your boy Kirk are not about that 10-day life. They want a full season contract. There are still other options out there. Baron Davis and Andre Miller also reportedly want to sign there.
this is so good.
I know.
Like, Baron Davis hasn't played for years, and he was so... I mean, that was a very unfortunate injury to end your career on,
right.
And that's not one you get back from to the same extent. So that's obviously the worst way to end your career, and I have my deepest sympathies there.
Yep.
But if you're a championship team, you're not going to be looking at Baron Davis. Come on now.
Right, yeah. So apparently also they've inquired with Dallas about trading for Deron Williams, according to Sam Amick of USA Today. And Amick reported that the Mavericks apparently showed interest in Iman Shumpert when he was a free agent, so maybe there's a deal to be made there. So, Mort, based on your reaction, I'm guessing you do not think any of these guys are the answer to LeBron's demands to find another playmaker?
Well, let me ask you this. In regards to my earlier Cave Felder point,
mm-hmm.
Would you rather give minutes to a 21-year-old who has a pretty significant potential load behind him? Mm-hmm. Or would you rather give those minutes to Kirk Heinrich, who is very inefficient, has mental lapses very frequently, whose defense have fallen off to the point where he's actually a liability?
Right. No, Captain Kirk would not be on my list of...
No, right? Yeah. And Baron Davis? Yeah, like, are you kidding me? No, of course not.
Yeah.
Like, of any of those candidates, like, outside of Darren Williams, would you really play any of them? Even Jordan Farmer, who I like, I should add.
Yeah.
Would you play those guys, outside of Darren Williams, that is, over Kay Felder?
That depends. I think... Right now, I would sign. I mean, I think they've got an open roster spot, and then they're trying to either trade Chris Birdman Anderson, who is out for the year, or they'll probably just waive him and see what happens on the buyout market. So right now, I would sign one of those guys just to have another healthy body and to reduce the workload on LeBron. LeBron's point with Kay is I don't think he doubts that Kay Felder is going to be a good player one day. I think he doubts that Kay Felder is ready if you call upon him in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Is he going to be able to contribute in such a high-pressure situation, having never been there before? Whereas he's gone to war with a guy like Mario Chalmers in the Finals. Jordan Farmar has won two titles. Lance Stephenson, you know, he had that ear-blowing incident in the Eastern Conference Finals, and Lance Stephenson played in two Eastern Conference Finals, so... Those guys are at least familiar with the pressure of playoff basketball. So for that reason, I probably would play them over a guy like Felder. You know, I think by the time we get to the playoffs, it's probably a non-factor anyway, because J.R. Smith should be back healthy. You're shortening your rotations anyway. So like these guys are kind of end of the bench options, but this is the thing he's saying with Kay Felder, with DeAndre Liggins, with Jordan McRae, he's like, these are good young players, but we just don't know that we can count on them just yet. I'd rather have a guy who I know I can count on in such a situation. And, you know, Lance and Mario are both good players. They're just coming off of, they're each coming off of injuries.
So I'm going to rant a little bit again.
Okay.
Because please. I get the whole experience point, and I don't disagree with it per se. But I am sort of tired of, you know, people having this, or players, I should say, having this reputation. Oh, he's been there before. Well, yeah, okay. Lance Stephenson has been there before, but right now he's a marginal player. Like, you still need talent. Like, okay, let's say you have a team that goes to the finals. You have a bench player averaging like 7 minutes a game in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of the career, people are like, oh, well, you know, that he was on that team that went far that one time. He's got experience.
Right.
Like, if the guy can't make a layup, then what's the point? Like, we put too much stock into a guy having been there, whereas we should focus on raw talent. And to your point regarding Kay Felder, like you, that LeBron wants a guy who's been there before and is ready. This is, you said ready, and that's the key phrase here. Mm-hmm. If you give Kay Felder a ton of minutes now, he is going to be way more ready come playoff time in April than he is if he's still averaging like 10 minutes a game and getting a whole bunch of DNPs.
Yeah.
Like, you need game time, and if you give it to him, he's going to get comfortable.
Yeah.
Like, that goes to basically... That point can be stretched to virtually every player in the entire NBA.
Right.
So I just... I get the logic. I just... I don't think it's bulletproof.
No, that's...
If you catch
my drift. Yeah, that is a completely fair thing to say. And, you know, that's frankly why I was such... You know, among the many reasons I believed in the process, I thought, you know, letting all of the Sixers young players kind of develop and get so many minutes is going to only behoove them, as it's proving to be
right.
You know, now all of a sudden that they're like kind of good again. You know, a guy like Robert Covington or TJ McConnell, they were both undrafted free agents. Like, you wouldn't think they were going to sniff an NBA court. Hollis Thompson for 3 years, undrafted free agent. They are now playing well, I think in part because they've been there and they've played so many minutes. So I think that is a fair argument to make I would push back a little bit in saying like Lance and Rio aren't productive players anymore. I think both are. I just think they're both coming off of injuries, so we don't know what they look like, you know, right now.
No, I agree.
But like, you know, Lance played well in limited minutes for the Pelicans this year before going down. Rio was playing great for the Grizzlies before he went down last year. So, you know, especially given his relationship with LeBron, if he's healthy enough to play, I would say he would be a guy, you know, if I'm the Cavs, that would probably be the guy I would go after, again, depending on his willingness to sign a 10-day deal. But, you know, he's a relatively good three-point shooter, almost 36% from his career, so that'll help. You know, he was never, like, even in his Miami days, he was never, like, what you would consider a primary playmaker. He never averaged more than 5 assists per game in a season. But because he's played, you know, he played 4 seasons alongside LeBron, there would be at least a little more familiarity there. Like, you know, LeBron has that photographic memory where he kind of knows, like, all right, Channing Frye likes the ball high, so I'm going to throw it high. Yeah. Like, he knows how Mario wants the ball already. There's not going to be an acclimation period where there will be for the other guys. So, I don't know. I would be, if I were a betting man, I would say, I mean, McMenamin says Farmar's, you know, the most likely to be signed, but if Chalmers is healthy enough to play by the end of the season, it would not surprise me if they signed him.
And that's an entirely fair point, especially regarding the knowledge of where people are. I just, what I'm arguing is that, okay, for the past 20 years, I've taken the bus. Mm-hmm. I have spent way too many hours in my life taking a bus. That does not give me any insight into driving it.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair.
And that's kind of where I'm at.
Right.
Like, that's, and I just feel like Kay Felder is the type of guy that you actually bet on. I was so surprised that he dropped that far. And like, LeBron was even hyped when they got him. So I feel this is... Now, look, let me just clarify before I say this. It's not. I don't think it is a dig at Kay Felder.
Right.
But I would understand if Felder felt that, oh, hey, you know, LeBron, I do exist.
Right, yeah. Like, I mean, what's your beef, LeBron?
Yeah, and I did pretty well in college. Yeah. I'm actually having a pretty decent, albeit in limited minutes, season. I mean... 12.8 PER, you know, that's fair.
Right.
That's fair for a guy drafted 54.
Yeah, 54. A second round rookie, that's much better than you can expect out of that position.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I would think, you know what could be the coolest thing ever was if Kay Felder just cold called LeBron like one evening and just went, yo, Bron, I appreciate everything that you want, but I'm your guy.
Yeah.
I'm your guy. I want to prove to you right here, right now, that I'm your guy. Let's call Ty because you are in charge of Ty anyway. Right. And let's bump up my minutes so I can prove to you that I'm going to be there. Mm-hmm. I'm ready. I don't have any injury issues. My legs are young and fresh. I'm not going to be rehashed talent. And I can, because I'm an unknown at this level, I can surprise people.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would be so awesome for Kay Felder to do something like that because that would also generate some interest from LeBron.
Yeah.
He'd be like, well, shit, kid's got
right,
it.
Yeah.
Kid's got some balls. Yeah. I'm gonna make sure that he gets the ball.
Yeah, that does seem like the move that would kind of engender respect among LeBron. So we'll see what happens with the Cavs. We will keep you guys updated. We're not going to talk about this, but Anderson Barjao also got waived from the Warriors today. So.
Oh no!
R.I.P. to Anderson Barjao, fouling everyone, just being caught.
It'd be so funny if the Cavs picked him up.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
Like then he would switch sides like every year.
Yeah,
that'd be perfect.
Oh god, and he would never win a ring. That would just be so.
Yeah. That would hurt so bad.
That would be pretty rough. Okay, so there was a big trade this week. The first, well, Kyle Korver was the first of the season. This one is possibly even less exciting than the Kyle Korver trade. Charlotte sent Roy Hibbert and Spencer Hawes to the Milwaukee Bucks for Miles Plumlee. So, Morton, who do you think won this riveting blockbuster of a trade?
Milwaukee, and here's why. I've been a big proponent of clearing cap space if you have guys on rookie deals. Mm-hmm. Now, I know Giannis signed an extension that is going to kick in this summer, and that's all fine and well. But if they can somehow remove Greg Monroe, John Henson from their cap situation, and now they actually saved, I think, $6 million, $4 million. They saved some money on this deal because they got out of Plumlee's $50 million contract, right? I always believe that if you have a young team, you need to capitalize in the free agent market, because when guys' rookies' contracts are that low, that frees up money to spend on veterans. Like, for example, we can just switch over to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Minnesota needs to do everything they can this upcoming trade deadline to move Ricky Rubio so they can clear up some cap space. Mm-hmm. Because if you are a team that can go out in the summer and say, well, we have a max salary cap slot available.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, they also need to move Cole Aldrich and some other pieces. But, you know, just follow my point here. They go into the summer, they talk to like a superstar, and they say, we have Karl-Anthony Towns, we have Andrew Wiggins, we have Zach LaVine, we have a young point guard in Chris Dunn, struggled a bit this year, but he's learning the game. He's having some up times and down times, whatever, but he could be good.
Right.
We have this and this and that. We can become like a 10-year contender if you sign with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll pay whatever we can. I mean, we'll pay whatever it takes in re-signing our guys. But right now, we are going to use that money on getting you established guys in.
Right.
Well, yeah. Like, could you imagine if we avoid the free agency here? If we just, like, imagine that the Minnesota Timberwolves would absorb Jimmy Butler's contract.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say they win the lottery and are looking at Markelle Fultz. Mm-hmm. And they're going, well, we need a guy right now. Okay, and they trade Markelle, the draft rights to Markelle Fultz for Jimmy Butler, because they want to win right now. They want to start winning, building this culture. Well, hell yeah. I mean, they can absorb that deal and they can get like a superstar in. I wouldn't do that trade for Minnesota specifically because they need a point guard and Markelle Fultz is a point guard, but you catch my drift.
Yeah.
Like they could do something there. But essentially, just having a bunch of rookie deals on the team frees up a lot of cap space and you need to utilize
it.
With Jabari Parker, you have this chance as well because he's still on a rookie deal.
Yep.
Giannis is actually pretty cheap. Like, he signed 4 years, $100 million?
Yeah, he signed slightly less than the max. And then Chris Middleton, who is a very good, also still pretty young player, is on a absolute discount of a deal. So, they do have cap space if they can move Henson and Monroe. I mean, Monroe might opt out this summer anyway, but he also might not. I think his player option is close to $18 million. Keith Smith of 16winsaring.com was reporting yesterday after this deal that they are looking to move both Henson and Monroe, or at least one of the two. They made this Hawes-Hibbert deal in mind, or with that in mind, basically, because right now they have five centers on their roster. They have those two. They have Henson and Monroe, and then they have Thonmaker, who they drafted 10th overall this past summer. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think, you know, I love it from Milwaukee's standpoint. I think they realize they made a mistake with the Plumlee contract, and the fact they got out of it already is insane. You know, Hibbert expires this summer.
Orlando wouldn't do that.
No, they sure wouldn't. I mean, Hibbert expires this summer. Hawes has a $6 million player option next for the 2017-18 season. But, you know, kudos. I just every smart move, I feel like Seth Partnow, who now works for the Bucks, I want to like credit him. Like, I think Malcolm Brogdon was probably him. I feel like this had to be, you know, like, I don't know if this was all Seth. I'm sure there are other decision makers involved, but it just feels like the organization has made a bunch of really smart moves since he came aboard. You know, even the MCW for Tony Snell swap. So, I love it from Milwaukee. I like this line. ESPN.com's Kevin Pelton wrote about he gave his usual trade grades for the deal. And he, like us, likes it a lot more. He gave the Bucks an A. He gave the Hornets a D. And he said this about the Hornets. This trade is the wrong solution. It's the equivalent of fixing a car that won't start by going out and buying a much more expensive car instead of simply changing the battery. So his point was, basically, Cody Zeller's been hurt for the last couple games, and it doesn't seem like there is a definitive timetable on his return. The Hornets are 22-16 with Zeller and 1-11 without him. So basically they're trying to stay in the playoff hunt while he is dealing with this quadriceps injury. But the problem is Cody Zeller is playing really well. So why are you bringing in a center who is now going to make, you know, $12 to $13 million for the next 3 years, right, when you already have Cody Zeller? So, I mean, apparently the Hornets really like Plumlee and think he can be good and productive, and, you know, maybe that's the case. Like, I kind of crapped on them for the Nick Batum trade, and that worked out well for them. So maybe history will repeat itself already. But, I mean, he's 28. Like, you know, it's not like they traded for a guy who's 22 or 23. Like, we are in the midst of his prime, and he's, you know, Plumlee was barely cracking the Bucks rotation. So,
yeah, 310 minutes on the season.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I hope for Charlotte's sake this works out well, but I'm worried that they are really locking themselves into basically the treadmill of mediocrity right now, where Kemba throughout his prime is going to be saddled with a roster that doesn't have much. There aren't really many avenues for improvement at this point, aside from more trades. But for Hornets fans' sake, I hope it works out. But, you know, right now I am skeptical. It sounds like most of the basketball blogosphere feels the same way, based on reaction to the deal on Twitter yesterday after it broke. So let's now talk more. Sarah and I have talked about Carmelo Anthony a bunch the last couple episodes, but we need to bring him up again because the Knicks are still reportedly trying to pursue a swap with Melo and Kevin Love, according to Mark Stein and Ramona Shelburne of ESPN.com. The Cavs are continuing to say, get the hell out of here with that. We don't want to get older and worse, unsurprisingly. Apparently,
well, the Bulls are looking to get younger and more athletic.
Oh, there, so Carmelo would be a good fit there. And he can, that's half.
It's only 32. That's young for the Bulls.
Half a team banana boat right there.
Right. They could. I mean, he's the perfect age, right?
I think so. You should probably trade Jimmy Butler for him.
Right, because, I mean, Jimmy's so young, just 27.
Yeah, he's going to... Way too inexperienced.
Way too inexperienced. Yeah. Yuck. Let me get on board with Carmelo, man. Almost 33. That's where we're going.
So apparently the Knicks are also still trying to convince either the Clippers or the Boston to take Melo, but they reportedly do not want Jamal Crawford's contract in return. He is owed $14.2 million next year, and then $14.5 million in 2018-19, only $4 million, which is guaranteed. Apparently, they don't realize Carmelo is also on an exorbitant contract that only gets richer with a trade kicker. So that's going to be a fun thing for Phil Jackson to realize in the next 3 weeks. But, Mort, what's your take on this whole Melo-Phil Jackson situation? Do you think they do trade him? Should they trade him? You know, how low should they be willing to go here?
Oh, man, the Knicks are going to be Knicksing, right?
Yeah.
So basically, they're probably going to end up trading him for 10 cents on the dollar. And then they're going to, like, make some sort of press conference where they argue that the player they got in return, who might be a D-leaguer or something, is perfect for their way of running a team. I mean, they are pretty good in trying to control the media as well.
Yeah, like, they really are.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're going to try to move. I think he's gone.
Yeah.
I think he's willing to waive his no trade clause for virtually every deal right now. I just think he wants out of there. But it's sad, though. Like, before I come into whether they'll move him or not, it's kind of sad because Tibbs, a couple years ago, said something that's right, as that's very accurate. And it's Melo is actually a better passer than he ever got credit for. Mm-hmm. That is true because on the rare occasions that we see playmaking Melo, he's making passes that, they are LeBron-esque at times. Not that he can sustain it over the full course of a game, but he does have that ability to put the ball right in the hands of a cutter who's running 15,000 miles a second, right?
Right,
and
right.
He's just just perfect passes.
Yeah.
And if Melo had been more inclined to use this ability of his, mm-hmm. he would have unlocked a game in New York, especially with Hornacek there, that probably would have maximized his talents a little bit more.
Yeah.
Now we're still stuck with the ISO Melo. And because he's so stubborn in that sense, it just teams are around the league are going, well, you know what? We're not interested because he won't learn.
Right.
He won't learn. He has all the gifts. Like even defensively speaking, Melo had every chance possible mm-hmm. during the course of his career to be a great defender.
Yeah.
Like really, think about it. 6'8", 230, come off the ground quick, moves laterally fairly well and quickly. I mean, it has great hand speed in terms of like when he flails his arm. It's really quick. It's deceptively quick, and this always has been the case. Mm-hmm. And he's been sneaky athletic. So, you know, every chance he had was there. And now he's just like, he is what he is. Do you catch my drift?
Yeah,
like
right.
he's just what he is, and people know it. And they're like, I would rather have guys who like Danny Green, who spots up, doesn't take like a whole bunch of seconds off the clock. Mm-hmm. when you get the ball.
Yeah.
And because Melo might average 23, but I wouldn't be surprised if we learned that he has the ball in his hands way more than a whole bunch of different 23 points scorers have.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So, you know, it comes down to, do you want to ruin ball movement in order to give this guy a chance to establish himself?
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes it works out. If he had not fouled out of that dramatic 4-overtime game against the Hawks, which was great, by the way. That was really good. I was actually heading to bed, and I was like, oh, I got a league pass alert. I was like, oh, I'm going to catch the final 5 minutes. It was, I think it was like 11 mm-hmm. at night. Mm-hmm. And the thing just kept on going. I was like, I was in bed. I was watching it on my phone. And then when it was over, it was like almost 2 in the morning. I was like, worth it.
Yeah.
Worth it. But before Melo fouled out, he had those, you know, insane shots where he held the ball, dribbled into his spot,
right.
and just got hot.
Yeah.
So I understand that there's also the aspect of attraction to his playmaking, or sorry, to his shot making.
Mm-hmm.
But is it worth giving up a huge asset? No.
Yeah.
I mean, it won't be. Like Blake Griffin isn't coming through those doors,
right.
people.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think so. At least.
No. Blake actually cannot, unless they move Derrick Rose as well, because you can't.
Right, because of the designated player.
But
role.
A player
right,
of his caliber will not. Sarah and I both agree with you on that front.
Yeah.
It's just it. We're both sad for Knicks fans because you know, it's the end of an era. But at least they have Kristaps. Mm-hmm. Let's just hope that he can hold up to the pressures of being a number one option. Because you know, again, I said this last week, but. You know, it's very different. I think Carmelo has been good in that sense for kind of shielding him from that criticism. You know, he's kind of the star in the making, and you can kind of blame Carmelo for the team's woes. But if they trade Carmelo and Kristaps that number one guy, suddenly he could be the scapegoat for things that go wrong. So we'll keep an eye on the Knicks for the next couple of weeks. They are sure to be interesting heading into the trade deadline. One other team we need to talk about, you and I have maligned them very often since this podcast has started, but the Orlando Magic, according to Sean...
Oh, wait, sorry, who?
Oh, yes.
The what?
The Orlando Magic, because...
The Lolando Magic.
Yeah. Sean Devaney of Sporting News reported this week that they are actively trying to trade Serge Ibaka, who they traded for this past summer. Reminder, they traded Victor Oladipo, the number 11 pick, which was used on Domantas Sabonis, and then Ersan Ilyasova as well. Apparently, Ibaka wants to move to a contender, which the Magic are not, and they are afraid he's going to leave in free agency for nothing. So more...
God damn it, just move Alan Crabb for him. Just, you know, Portland, you need it big. I've been on that wagon for a while. You know this.
Yeah, that would be fun. So do you think, should the Magic trade him no matter what by February 23rd?
Well, if Ibaka doesn't want to be there, then he's gone for nothing. Then you would have traded Oladipo and Sabonis for absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you messed up big time. Now it's time to at least get something back. I mean, wow. That's like the quickest the quickest return. Like you had like a team who were looking to build properly,
Right.
rebuild
I know.
properly, and then they just messed it up in like one summer. I've never seen anyone just torpedo themselves like this that quickly.
Do you remember the
It's pretty
Pelicans
amazing.
signing Omer Asik to a 5-year, $50 or $60 billion contract?
That was bad, but they didn't give like a Victor
No,
Oladipo, right? But that was definitely
this
bad. I
one
mean, the
was
whole
egregious, and we called it out from the beginning because, again, I hate to bring it up, but Aaron Gordon is best suited to play the four. You then
Obviously.
Ibaka is now playing the four. You're pushing Aaron Gordon down. You have these, you have Frank Vogel selling, oh, well, he could be a playmaker like Paul George, but he can't. His 3-point shot is not all that consistent, so he's not. Right now, he's dominant as a small ball four. That is the role he thrived in after the All-Star break last year. It's one of those things we've talked about this in previous episodes where general managers often allow mistakes to compound because they don't want to admit they were wrong. So, not trading Ibaka and letting him test free agency and see what happens is basically that is playing with fire because he is most likely going to leave. He has no incentive to stay there. He's going to. Unless they trade Aaron Gordon, which would be an even bigger mistake. But their front court is just so loaded. He wants to go to a team where he has a chance, like the Magic are one of the worst teams in the NBA right now. And this is what, year five since they traded Dwight Howard? They should be showing some signs of progress. The Sixers, they had a 1-year head start on the Sixers in terms of a rebuild. They were the only ones from that Dwight Howard deal that actually got considerable assets. Like everyone else lost, and they are resounding winners. And yet, I would argue that all three of the other teams are further ahead in their respective rebuilds, the Lakers, the Sixers, and the Nuggets, than the Magic are. So, hell yeah, Ibaka's gonna leave, and I'm with you. I think, sell him to the highest bidder, but you are really asking for trouble if you keep him on your roster past February 23rd, because you are almost certainly going to lose him for nothing.
So, when I was a kid and I was playing NBA Live, remember when NBA Live didn't suck?
Sure do.
All right. Sometimes I would play these, franchise modes where I could like play, 15, 20 years down the road, in the future. And sometimes I would play as like a team that wasn't my favorite team just because I wanted some diversity. But if I then suddenly got like a young superstar or a very good young player, I couldn't help myself. I would trade that guy to the Chicago Bulls. Because, hey, why not? I want to make the Bulls stronger. I don't care if I go out. Because, yeah, I was still a Bulls guy. Was. Notice the was. I'm kind of thinking Rob Hennigan is sort of playing NBA Live right now, just trying to ruin it for himself and just make other teams better. Like he was with the Thunder.
True. That's a good point.
Remember?
Yeah. It's a very
So
good
he
point.
just swung that deal to OKC. Like, I still love you, OKC. Let me just here, take it, take
Yeah,
everything.
I'm sorry you're about to lose Kevin Durant. Please rob me as a condolence.
So basically we've concluded that Rob Hannigan right now is playing NBA Live or 2K. That's where we're at because I can find no other reason for the deal. I can find no other explanation for what they're trying to do. Like, or with all respect to Elfrid Payton, who's been
Yeah,
balling
he's been playing well.
over a specific, he's really been playing well. I don't think he's ever going to get like the reliable jump shot that you do need in an NBA guard. I don't think he's ever going to be like a strong free throw shooter, which you need in an NBA guard. But they virtually chose him over Scott Skiles. Scott Skiles went to management, said, "I am not sure this is the guy you want to build around." And they were like, "Hey, Scott, go away." Just resign. We'll just say you, yeah, just yeah. I mean, this is really, really poor management in basically every way. This is Chicago Bulls, Sacramento Kings-esque bad.
Right.
And I don't think Rob Hennigan has a job. I mean, after the conclusion of this season.
I hope not.
Unless he absolutely nails an Ibaka trade now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the one that I think, you know, Toronto has been rumored to be interested in Ibaka, and their power forward situation is an outright disaster. Devaney mentioned them as a team that might be interested, along with the Houston Rockets. He said the Raptors are reluctant to include Terrence Ross in any deal, but Norman Powell is playing really well lately. So I just think, I mean, you know, if you're Toronto, you're risking him walking in the summer as well, but you're already capped out, especially once you re-sign Kyle right. Lowry. Like, you're not going to get a player of Ibaka's caliber on the free agent market, so you basically need to make a trade or you're not going to beat the Cavs ever.
Thank you for making sense. I've had this debate with so many people.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah. They have. Yeah. So many people are like, oh, well, it's okay. They don't have to give up. They shouldn't give up a whole lot for Millsap or Ibaka.
Right, in the
yeah,
world.
They do. Like,
yes.
Of course they. I mean, I don't care. If they give up 2 first-round draft picks and Jakob Poeltl, which is essentially 3 first-round draft picks,
right.
Doesn't matter. Just get that all-star caliber power forward in there.
Yeah.
And then if you pay through the nose for him,
yeah.
You'll also be sending him a message saying, you know what? We just gave up everything to get you. That means we want you. That means we're ready to re-sign you to, like, big-ass money in the summer.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't do. So they own their own first-round draft pick plus a lottery-protected first from the Clippers this year. Yeah. Terrence Ross and either one of those picks, they're going to be in the 25 to 30 range, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
Right. For Ibaka. It's just so, I mean, you know, then Orlando gets to save face a little bit because Terrence Ross, who knows, he could turn into something promising. He'd be a nice fit, another shooter in that lineup. You know, you could put him at the 2 and you can put Fournier at the 3 or vice versa. It just makes so much sense. So I'm very much with you, not only that the Magic need to trade Ibaka, but that the Raptors should be the one to get him. Let's turn quickly to All-Star Saturday before we hit our final topic of the week. The Saturday night contestants were announced, so I'm just going to read out the names for each contest, and then, Mort, you're going to tell me who you think wins each one.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the 3-point shootout, which Sarah is super pissed about because her boy Danny Green did not make it. She says, you should have to shoot at least 40% to warrant an invite. And then she emailed some not safe for work thoughts as well. So, 3-point shootout is Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, CJ McCollum, Kemba Walker, Wes Matthews, Eric Gordon, Kyle Lowry, and Nick Swaggy P. Young. Mort, who do you think wins that one?
I mean, just because of the absurdity, I kind of want Swaggy
yes.
to win it, just
yes.
because it's so weird.
Me too.
But I read an article recently saying that CJ McCollum is hands down the best shooter in the league this
yeah.
year because his points per shot, point per shot is just ridiculously high.
Right.
So I'm just going to go with the hot hand.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like, I'm bailing out. I'm just saying McCollum.
Yep.
And also because I like CJ. Like, CJ's got, he's got game.
Yeah.
He's really got game. I mean, to the point where I'm kind of considering that if you ever were forced to trade one of him or Dame,
mm-hmm.
kind of leaving Dame.
Interesting. Well, that's
yeah.
a discussion. We're doing this fake b-ball breakdown mock trade deadline thing, which is just
has been so fun,
turned into such a tire fire. So we can discuss the results of that next time. The deadline itself is tonight. We'll talk about that next time because the guy managing Portland, Oliver Moroney, did wind up training Damian Lillard. I'm with you. I think McCollum wins it, but I would love Swaggy P too. And I don't know if you saw this, but the Lakers played the Wizards on Thursday night, and after Nick Young missed a shot, the Wizards PA announcer started playing Fancy by Iggy Azalea.
Yeah.
So kudos to the Wizards. You just rose my rankings of excellent organizations because that was hilarious.
That was perfect. That was really perfect.
Okay, so let's move to the skills challenge. They brought back this bigs versus smalls thing. So on the smalls team, we have John Wall, Devin Booker, Gordon Hayward, and Isaiah Thomas. On the bigs, we have Kristaps Porzingis, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, and my boy, Joel Embiid. Who do you got in this one, Mort?
Well, look, you are always the guy who's editing the podcast, so it doesn't matter what I'm saying. You're just going to edit in MB. Yeah. You're going to put your own word in. So how does this function? Because honestly, I have not paid attention to the skills channels in years because I really don't care about All-Star Weekend. So it's a small team against a big team, and then there's a winner for each side, or one total winner?
I believe there is one total winner. Because I think it's like a small versus a big in the last one, and then I think
give me Isaiah Thomas then.
Okay, yeah, I'm taking Embiid. I don't care. He's not gonna win, but no, I'm not gonna. I already picked against him for Rookie of the Year, like a total jackass. So I'm never gonna pick against him for anything ever again. The dunk contest. We have Aaron Gordon, Glenn Robinson III, Derek Jones Jr. of Phoenix, and DeAndre Jordan, who I successfully predicted would participate last week. So who do you have in this one, Mort?
I've only seen a few highlights of Derek Jones Jr. Yeah. Like, I've never seen a game with him dunking, so I can't really talk about his creativity level.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to stick to Aaron Gordon, just because. I mean, kind of know he's creative. Gave a show last year, I think. I didn't see it.
Yeah. But no, it was good. Yeah. It was good. Yeah. I think he's going to be the favorite, but I'm going to pick Derek Jones Jr. because I have likewise only seen like dunk highlights from him, but the dude could really dunk. So I think it's going to be, you know, this one lacks kind of the big name players, but I think, you know, outside of like nerdy basketball people, so Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine were both relatively unknown last year, and they put on one of the best dunk contests we've seen in years. So no one's going to know who Derek Jones Jr. is coming into the contest, but I really think they will once he is done. So there we go.
This might be the time that I return to the All-Star game or All-Star weekend. I don't really have any interest in the All-Star festivities. I'm old and boring, Brian, because when you don't play defense in an All-Star game, just everything loses its competitive edge. Oh, I'm lying, because I do always make a point when I wake up on Sunday, I do go back and watch the three-point shootout.
Okay.
The three-point shootout is like a staple to me, because you can't really mess that format up.
No, you really can't. Especially, I mean, sorry, Sarah, I know you're going to hate us for saying Danny Green is not in there. But yeah, I think they've got a bunch of great shooters in there. That should be fun. I think the whole weekend's going to be a lot of fun. Embiid's in two things, so I'm happy. I might boycott the All-Star game itself. I'm going to be in Florida that weekend, so maybe that's the day I go to Harry Potter World and just skip the All-Star game. But yeah, I will be watching.
That's fitting, because you look like Harry a little bit, just Harry with a beard.
I know, yeah. All right, so that's All-Star Weekend. All right, let's talk one thing in our Where Amazing Happens segment before we go to our crushes of the week. Magic Johnson is returning to the Lakers as an advisor, but still returning to the Lakers franchise.
Advisor, and I'm doing air quotes here.
So I'm going to read this from the press release, and then you should tell me how nervous Jim Buss should be. So the Lakers, announcing this Thursday, said his duties will include, but not be limited to, advising ownership on all business and basketball matters, collaborating with coaches, evaluating and mentoring players, assessing future franchise needs, and helping ownership to determine the best path for growth and success. If I'm Jim Buss.
Bye, Jim. Yeah. Bye, Jim. But here's the thing, though. We talked about this before we actually started recording. If Magic is like his Twitter feed when he's sitting there, it would be the worst thing ever. Could you just imagine they have like this very important meeting before the draft? Like, and just go, all right, so we have this pick. Let's say they win the lottery.
Uh-huh.
Like, so are we going Markelle Fultz or are we going Lonzo Ball? Magic, I like Markelle Fultz. Markelle Fultz is a good point guard. He is good at basketball. Like Twitter Magic would just come up with these.
I know. But anyone else, Lonzo Ball is also good at basketball. Both are great players.
Lonzo Ball is also. Lonzo Ball does well for UCLA. Yeah. He is really exciting.
I know. Like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to crap on Magic because he is really charismatic. Like, go watch him on TV and he really, you know, he has some great insights at times and he can be really charismatic.
Definitely.
But yeah, his Twitter feed, for Parks and Rec fans out there, reads like Perd Hapley. He's basically just the living embodiment of Pearl and Halfley.
But, you know, it's not crapping on Magic. It's actually, I look at this as including Magic. Because we, you know, bloggers and podcasters like us, we make fun of everyone, including ourselves.
That's true.
Like, we have a very open-minded podcast, and we make fun of everyone, and you know, including Magic in that is sort of like a seal of approval.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have tremendous enjoyment of Magic when he's on the air. I still go back and look at highlights. I think he's fantastic. He's very inspirational. Also, in his business ventures. It's just his Twitter feed. That's the only thing. It's just funny to watch his, to read his Twitter feed because it is so generic. It's just like John Wall is. Where's number two for Washington Wizards, and that is, and he is at the same time a very good point guard. Like, okay, Magic, it's hashtag analysis, right? And it's just it's perfect. Like, and because the reason I love it is because you can feel the positivity.
Right.
It's like he's so rarely negative, and I like that.
Unless he's talking about the Lakers.
Yeah, except Oh, D'Angelo Russell had a turnover. Yeah. That is not good.
Right.
Yeah. No, but you know, this that is definitely not crabbing on Magic. I actually think this is a good idea because it wouldn't surprise me if he got really into a situation with the Lakers where they gave him a whole bunch of data and insights and had him talk to scouts and assistant coaches, like player development coaches. I definitely think Magic would be like very hands-on.
Yeah.
I could totally see him like just, you know, put on shorts, go out on the court and just go, yo, you know, DR, come over here.
Right.
Like when I played, I always saw this angle.
Yeah,
I saw this
definitely.
Angle. And he would do it like in a very positive manner.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be like he would be ripping on D'Angelo from doing like something bad. Like he would probably say, you know, because Magic is Magic. He'd grin widely and say, you got to do this.
Yeah.
Like instead. And he'd point and, you know, because Magic is great in that sense. He's very, you know, optimistic.
Right. It's not like they're bringing in Kobe to just annihilate the confidence of their younger players. Yeah, I mean, as a veteran, a 1-year veteran of a situation similar to this where a team had a sudden management change in the middle of the season and then tried to play it off as nothing to see here, but turned out it was the start of a coup. Jim Buss, I would start updating your resume because it seems as though you will be out at season's end. I mean, Jim promised that the Lakers would be championship contenders, whatever that meant. There have been differences between him and Jeannie. You know, he was saying at least second round of the playoffs. She was saying Western Conference Finals. Either way, they are currently very firmly in the lottery. If anything, they should be tanking openly so they protect their pick in 2017.
Right.
But I think it is safe to say the Lakers will not be making the playoffs this year. So even if Magic wasn't brought in, you know, I think
Jim is out, definitely.
But
you know, at least he has, like you said, typing out his resume.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got a good chance of becoming a manager at Chick-fil-A. So I mean, that's
the Magic are going to need a new general manager in a couple months. Maybe you can just move down there.
All right, so he would actually ruin two franchises.
Yeah,
that's not
there.
Bad.
You go.
That's something to have on your resume. That's what's going to make Chick-fil-A interested.
Yeah.
Build that resume. You'll reach Chick-fil-A one day, Jim. I promise.
Or your Chicago Bulls. Too soon.
Mm-hmm. I just want to add like a sound effect here with crickets because.
Yeah. I just saw your face just drop when I said that.
No. I have wet dreams about a Sam Hinkie Mike Zarin duo hiring, like where you give Sam Hinkie team president role and just let Mike handle the GM duties. Jesus, I would love that.
Yeah. So I would advise anyone who does not believe Jim Buss is in dire straits. Bleacher Report's Kevin Ding, who is very well sourced within the Lakers organization, has a column about it that I would suggest checking out. It basically says Magic has been openly critical of Jim Buss for a couple of years now, and he might delight in being the one to fire him effectively. So
Magic is so positive he'll fire Jim, like smiling.
Yeah,
so, but you know, he'll come
hey,
in.
Buddy.
Hi, Jim. So, in best Twitter style, Jim, you are fired. You are no longer a general manager, or you are no longer a team president of the Los Angeles Lakers. I am.
Right. Have a good day.
Have a very nice day.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Lakers fans, brace yourselves for some turmoil in the coming months. But hey, at least Magic is back in the fold. So let's close things out this week with our crushes. Again, these are players who don't really catch enough attention that they should. So, Mort, give me your crush of the week.
Oh, you know who, yeah. Brian. The guy that I had wrongfully, admittedly, as the most improved player, Seth Curry.
Yes.
He's been balling. And I'm going to read his season numbers instead of just what he's done the last couple weeks. He's playing just under 28 minutes a game. And he is hitting 42% of his threes, almost 47% from the floor. He's not really getting to the free throw line a whole lot, so that's not really a thing. 11.5 points a game, and it's fine. Like, in that sense, it's not MIP fine, but it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, 15 minutes per 36, solid shooting percentage, very solid shooting efficiency. And he's got this ability at times to take over games. Like, he tore San Antonio a new one. And I'm kind of seeing, if we're going by Sarah's logic, why isn't he in the three-point contest?
It's a fair point. So you do not need to read his recent stats, but I will, because I wrote about him today at FanRag Sports in my weekly fantasy basketball column. He came into the starting lineup 11 games ago. He's averaging almost 16 points on 50% shooting 47.5 from three, hitting 2.5 threes a game. Also, four rebounds, two assists, almost two steals a game.
The four rebounds is surprising to me when I looked at those numbers.
Yeah.
Like, he also had 10 rebounds in the Spurs game.
He is playing out of his mind. And to your credit, you were the one who was most aghast when the Mavs stole him this summer in free agency.
I absolutely loved him. I thought that he was going to get like $7 million a year for some team.
I know.
And then 2 years, $6 million? I mean, look, our friend Bobby Carella. Yep. Who does a wonderful job covering the Mavs.
Yes.
Like, he's a must follow out there, people. Yep. I can feel he's containing himself when he tweets about him. Because he's in love with this dude as well. And it's so great to see, because I mean Seth Curry deserved this shot. He was bouncing around and finally found a home, right?
Yep.
I mean, Sacramento last year.
I know.
Yikes.
I know. So just a quick spoiler for the aforementioned B-ball breakdown trade deadline thing that we're doing. I, as the Sixers GM, did trade Jahlil Okafor to Dallas for Seth Curry, JJ Barea, and a 2020 unprotected first round pick. And I
wait, who's the GM of the Mavs? Like, how did that?
It was Eric, who writes for the True Hoop site in Atlanta.
Eric. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Damn, Eric. That's.
That's
bold. Yeah,
did not get a good review from Dallas fans on Twitter when I tweeted that out. But again, we will talk more about that next week once the piece goes live, so we can reference that as well.
Yeah, I did some trades too, Brian. And let me just tell you, I decided to build around Jimmy Butler and stuff, blowing everything up, and I got shooters, man.
Yeah, you did.
Not great shooters, but
you
shooters.
You did. I've been impressed with... I'll say this, you could tell very quickly who the Vlades in the exercise were, and it was just a matter of who could take advantage of them first.
Shots fired right there. Yeah.
So, all right, back to my crush of the week. I'm going the Homer route this week. I'm going to shine a spotlight on Robert Covington.
The Homer route,
I know,
route?
Right? Well, so, you know, Rob lost his shot for a while there at the beginning of the season, to the point where he was getting booed every time he touched the ball in Philly.
Harsh.
Yeah, which is stupid. We need to stress that right off the bat, people. He is a great player. Even if he missed, you know, he can go 0 of 10 from 3-point range, but what he brings on defense, he's a valuable member of this core. I hope he's a Sixer for a long time.
And he's a great rebounder.
Yeah. So recently, in his last 16 games, putting up 14 points on 44% shooting, 7 rebounds, 2.3 threes, 2 assists, 2.1 steals, and 1.2 blocks in 33.4 minutes a game. He's among the leader in deflections. The dude's just a monster. And he's, you know, this is, if we're going to talk about the process and, you know, kind of the different avenues that Hinkie used to bolster the roster, Rob Covington, he is the reason you cycle through 10-day contracts and undrafted players, because if you find one Rob Covington out of 10, and he also found Hollis Thompson and TJ McConnell, both of whom have proved productive, but hell, you can do one Rob Covington out of 100. You get a guy like that on that contract for 4 years, it's worth it. Yeah. So kudos to Bob for pulling out of his early season slump, and please forgive the Philly fans who boo you. We want you here for a long time. I hope you resign after 2017-18.
Yeah, like $1,087,000 on his contract for next season.
I know.
Like, he is so underpaid. Can he even afford his mortgage? Like,
well, Philly is very dirt cheap to live in, so probably. But
oh, okay, that's something.
Yeah, he is due for a massive raise, and I hope, frankly, the Sixers just negotiate an extension with him and don't even let him test the free agent market the following summer, because
here's the thing. Actually, this is a thing I've thought about before. I don't know if it has any merit whatsoever, but like, okay, you're Robert Covington, right? Mm-hmm. You've been his deal is expired, he's been in the league for 4 years, earning about $1 million a year.
Yep.
So could there be like a psychological effect that says if he's getting offered like $12 million a year,
yeah,
that's going to seem like, oh my God, that is so much money, I'm just going to accept right off the bat, even though he might be worth 18. Like, you know, I'm just wondering, because I would probably, if I've been earning by all accounts, a low amount, I would just look at any significant raise as being, you know, the biggest thing ever. And I would just take it without even thinking.
I
know he has an agent.
Yeah, right. That's going to say, that's like, what his agent is for, to weave through that and say like, look, Bob, I know 12 is a lot, but you're going to get 18 to 20. Just chill your jets for a second. Don't take the first offer you receive.
But I can just see like a guy like that. Yeah. You just send in the paperwork right now. Well, I want that 12 million.
That's what I'm hoping is, you know, Philly fans need to stop effing booing him. And then maybe he shows a little hometown loyalty and, you know, like he decides, you know, we've got Simmons, we've got Embiid, we've got whatever comes from the next two drafts. Like, I have a good young core that I can build around here. I want to stick around. But if he keeps getting booted every home game, it's probably not going to happen. So,
and so think, this is an undrafted player who's coming in and playing a lot. But he had his debut in 2014, so the 2013-14 season, the same year that Tony Snell joined the league as the 20th pick.
Yep.
And Robert Covington is blowing Snell out of the water. Like, the Bulls actually thought Snell could be, and I kid you not, a Scottie Pippen-like player. But Robert Covington is the closest thing, when it comes, at least between the two. Like, Kawhi has that thing on lockdown.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the long arms, the ability to rebound and run up the floor.
Yep.
There's a little bit, there's a jump shot there. There's a couple of nice things. I mean, I would definitely go that route instead of always looking in a different direction.
And we have officially come full circle. We have returned to Bulls hatred. So I think this is a good place to wrap things up for the week. Once again, thank you for listening to the NBA podcast. Again, be sure to check us out on Twitter at the NBA pod. Again, all three of our Twitter handles are in the bio, so be sure to give us...
Oh, I got a new one.
Oh, yeah, Morton got a new one, so make sure...
I got a new one.
It's
much easier.
MSJ at MSJ NBA instead.
Right. And before it was like Morton _S_Jensen. It was horrible.
Yeah, so be sure you follow Mort at his new handle. Again, that is MSJ NBA. And then you can find ours in the Twitter bio as well. Again, check us out on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe and download and leave some reviews. And then FanRag Sports and FanRag NBA, both of those are the Twitter handles as well. Mort, as always, it's good talking to you. I'm sorry we had to mull on the Bulls for so long this week.
That's okay, Brian. And, you know, before we go, we should just welcome Zach Harper to the FanRag Sports Network.
Yes, Zach is, I believe, joining us for the rest of the season, which is great to see.
Yeah.
So, again, check out FanRag Sports, and you can get some... Zach's had a couple really good pieces on there already, so be sure to check those out. Until next time, Mort, good talking to you.
Likewise, Brian.
All right, take care.
You too, man.